are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hopefully you are having another great stay at home, hopefully work from home week. Today we are going to open with a few Wolves related notes off the top, not directly related to the coronavirus induced hiatus, which is a bit refreshing. Then we will jump right back into our somewhat of a deep dive on the 2003-2004 Timberwolves. We are joining the rest of the shows across the Locked On NBA network in spending the majority of our week focusing on the best season in the franchise that we cover is history. Pretty obvious that the 03-04 Wolves is far and away the best team in Timberwolves history, both in the regular season and in terms of playoff success. So we'll dive back into that. Some of the key Wolves notes of the week kind of tied directly into that conversation as well. So it's a fairly natural segue as well. So first, a quick reminder to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, the first note has nothing to do with the 03-04 Wolves. It has to do entirely with the 2019-2020 and future Timberwolves teams. The ESPN Future Power Rankings are out. I believe this is a little earlier than they typically are with where everything's at. Obviously, no games here in the past, 3 weeks at least now, almost 4 weeks. So these rankings are done by Kevin Pelton and Sean Marks at, Bobby Marks at ESPN, related to basically they take five categories. They rank the entire league relative to each other. So for instance, players is one category. They rank every team 1 through 30. Management, money, market, and draft are the other five or the other four categories. And then they come up with a composite ranking and then slot the teams 1 through 30. And the definition of what the future power rankings are is the projection of the on-court success expected for each team over the next three seasons. This is an ESPN Plus piece, so I can't verbatim just list off the entire rankings, unfortunately. If you have an ESPN Plus subscription, please go check it out. I can say, however, that the Timberwolves have a disappointing ranking once again. Last year at this time, I guess not exactly this time, but in the offseason last year, the Wolves were ranked 25th in these power rankings, despite having Karl Anthony Towns. This year, they somehow dropped a slot, 26th, although I think if you asked either Pelton or Marks to their face, is the Timberwolves roster today better than it was 12 months ago? Pretty confident that the answer would be yes, given some of the shuffling that happened last offseason. I guess the tough thing is essentially you're swapping out Covington as your second best player for D'Angelo Russell. And while there's more upside there today, Covington is a better producer on both ends of the floor than D'Angelo Russell is. And obviously Towns has been hurt and hasn't had an all-star season, but it's hard to argue against a team that has two guys that were all-stars in their age 22 and 23 seasons. They've got two guys who were all-stars just last season and are still not even in their primes. So it's really hard for me to understand how they can be ranked 26th. They are tied 23rd in players for ranking, tied 23rd in management, which I can understand that the jury's still out a little bit on Gerson Rosas. He's not even been the boss for a year. Tied for 18th in money, which is basically salary cap, 30th in market, so last in NBA markets, tied for 4th in draft capital. They do factor in the fact that the Wolves just acquired another first-round pick from Brooklyn in the at the trade deadline, so the Wolves do have two first-round picks this year and own the majority of their future picks, although I guess they did trade away their 21 first-rounder. So to me, I wouldn't quite rank them that high in draft capital, or even really in salary cap, although they're in decent shape there. I also wouldn't rank the market 30th, but it is probably bottom five considering what NBA players are all about. Although I think everybody knows that market matters a lot less now than it used to. For instance, the Knicks are tied for third in market. I would think that, 15 years ago, if you asked what's the best market, everybody would say New York. Now the fact that they're not number one, but they're still tied for third doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Market matters less now than it used to, that's for sure. And then having the players ranked tied 23rd is a little bit tough for me, unless they don't mention not factoring in Malik Beasley resigning. But if Beasley resigns, I mean, that's a a pretty legit top three, and two guys who have already been All-Stars, and a guy in Malik Beasley who, when given the opportunity, has played like an All-Star, at least offensively. So all that to say, the 26 ranking is perhaps not quite correct. It has them just behind Washington. Tough to understand that one. Behind Sacramento, behind Chicago, Atlanta, Orlando. It's a few of those teams I'm not really sure are necessarily trending up. I think there's some false, I guess you could say, false positive signs from a couple of those teams this year. But all that to say, those are the featured power rankings. Go check them out if you are able to, if you have an ESPN Plus subscription. The other note that I wanted to mention before we dive into the 03 or 04 Wolves once again is Kevin Garnett. No doubt, if you're listening to this, you likely saw on Tuesday that Garnett gave an interview to Shams Charania of The Athletic related to primarily his Hall of Fame induction, which became official, as we discussed on Monday's show, came official at the end of last week. But there were a couple of questions that were related directly to his time in Minnesota and the Timberwolves. The first leading question was basically, Shams asked him how much do you wish that the 2003-2004 group got a championship, especially if Sam Cassell didn't get hurt in the playoffs? Kind of a weirdly phrased question. Garnett went on to say, quote, "I don't play should have, could have, would have." And then he said that a couple of times over and over, and then said if he could go back and change anything, he would have left the Timberwolves earlier, knowing that management wasn't as committed, would have gone to Boston earlier, played more with Paul Pierce when he was younger. So right after saying he won't play could have, would have, should have, he said that he could have won another ring or two with Boston, but that a little bit inconsistent there. The rest of it, he shouts out Flip Saunders, Kevin McHale, Timberwolves fans, Minnesota, Minneapolis, talks about loving his time in Minnesota, and then also... And then when he's asked about retiring his number 21 jersey in Minnesota, because as we talked about a few weeks ago on this podcast, the Celtics will be retiring his number 5 jersey in Boston next season. Garnett goes on to say that he doesn't do business with snakes, calls Glenn Taylor a snake, says he won't deal with Taylor or Taylor Corporation or anything that has to do with them, says he loves the Timberwolves, special place in his heart for Minneapolis and the state of Minnesota, but has some expletives for Glenn Taylor, and basically related to the relationship that soured for a second time after Flip Saunders died. Saunders and Garnett apparently had an understanding that Garnett would kind of ride off into the sunset, take over ownership pieces, maybe get involved in the front office. And legally, Taylor and Garnett could not discuss that when Garnett was a player under contract. But basically, once Tom Thibodeau got the keys to the team after Saunders passed away, Garnett was kind of pushed out. He didn't pick up that option, or the team didn't pick up their option on him for the last year of his deal. And he was not a part of the picture on or off the court. And obviously Garnett has some strong feelings about that still. Hard to blame him, given that twice now him and Taylor have had a falling out, but also disappointing, I think, for Timberwolves fans. I think I speak for virtually all Timberwolves fans when saying that sort of a breakup with easily the best player in franchise history is really difficult. No doubt when Taylor eventually sells, and remember a few years ago, Taylor was very serious about selling the team. And when he eventually does sell, I would imagine the Wolves would be retiring Garnett's jersey on day one of the new ownership group. But we're not there right now. And this is just another unfortunate turn. The part that will kind of segue us into the 03-04 discussion is in addition to Shams asking Garnett how badly he would have wanted to win a championship with that group of players, he also talks about Garnett playing point guard in the Western Conference Finals in 2004 because of Sam Cassell's injury. We will get into that, not today, but in our final episode of this mini-series that we're doing, to talk about what that playoff series looked like. Well, I guess the whole playoff run looked like, and the injuries that that kind of set the Wolves back a little bit, and what Garnett had to do in the playoffs, which included playing point guard. I guess the spoiler here is he did not like it. He talked to Shams about he said it was the worst playing point guard. He said that coming up the court, bringing the ball up, passing it, and then giving it to himself and scoring and playing point guard was not something that he liked to do. And he said that he gained a lot of respect for that position after having to do that. One wonders how much that could have helped him kind of mentor Rajon Rondo in Boston, which obviously became a thing just a few years after that. So interesting note there, and an interesting question that Shams chose to ask him of, you know, he only asked him like 8 questions and that was one of them. So I thought that was a pretty interesting take. All right, next up, we're going to get a little deeper into the 03-04 season. I want to go through the regular season and basically look at how how that campaign went, the moves the Wolves made along the way, both to the rotation and roster-wise, and where they ended up headed into the playoffs. And then later this week, we will talk about the playoff run itself. Before we get into that, I did want to mention our friends at MyBookie. Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball benched and pitchers off the mound, but our friends at MyBookie aren't going to let it get you down. Stay sane and stay entertained with access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. It doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home, the fun doesn't have to come to an end with MyBookie. Video poker, not your thing, but still need a fix? They've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right, they have professional dealers at their tables live on site 24/7. Your favorite squad sidelined because of the pandemic? Don't even sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you can always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like these. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to receive a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit. And you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, you get paid. All right, in the first episode of this series about the 03-04 Wolves, we talked about the 02-03 season, how that season came to an end, what the offseason looked like when the Wolves acquired the likes of Sam Cassell, Latrell Sprewell, Michael Olowokandi, Fred Hoiberg, and what those roster changes looked like that summer and how much of the roster turned over. It was something like 7 of the top 11 minutes getters from the previous season were shipped out and new guys were brought in. There were players that were, Wozniak was impacted due to injury during 2003-2004, didn't play nearly as much as he had the previous season. Gary Trent was more of a fringe player. Just a few of those changes, which really were significant. So today I'd like to kind of dive into the regular season, look at how that season went, kind of the chronology of the streaks that the Wolves went on during the season, and then what those roster changes looked like. The team actually started just 5-5 that year, and then just 9-8 through the month of November. So you're talking basically 6 weeks into the season. This team's only 9-8, coming off of a 51-win season and making all these roster changes. Clearly, there was a period of acclimation of getting Cassell and Sprewell up to speed, figuring out what this lineup was going to look like, Olowokandi trying to find a role in the post next to Kevin Garnett. But then the Wolves won 9 of their next 10 games. They went 17-3 over their next 20. This is starting basically the first week of December. And then went 22-4 overall from the start of December through January 26th. So 22 of 26 games they won. Some of the moves they made during that streak, almost directly, they moved Michael Olowokandi out of the starting lineup. There was an injury in there that impacted him a little bit towards the end of November. There were a few games he didn't dress, wasn't with the team on the road, and had a bit of an injury bug. But during that time, Irvin Johnson started the majority of games. Irvin Johnson at the time was a journeyman center, had a couple of really nice seasons with Milwaukee and Denver, but really was kind of a fringy bench type guy. He came over in the Sam Cassell trade from Milwaukee along with Cassell and basically replaced Joe Smith on this team, whereas Olowokandi was supposed to be the offensive player, the guy who was going to help take some of the load off Garnett in the post and also be a good rim protector. And still had some upside. He was seen as a guy that could be a longer term running mate with Garnett. He signed a 3-year deal with the team, and then Irvin Johnson ended up kind of taking over that starting job. He's the solid defender. Didn't have hardly any offensive game. You scroll through his game log. He didn't have a single game where he attempted more than 6 shots over the course of a game. And the vast majority of his games, he was attempting 2 or 3. Shots. He was a defensive-minded player. This is even when he was starting and averaging close to 20 minutes a game as a starter. You pick a couple games out where he played over 30 minutes. There was one game against San Antonio in January. He played 30 minutes, shot the ball 2 times, 1 of 2 from the field, 6.7 rebounds, and that's just what he did. That's what he brought to the table. And he was a solid defender and did a legitimately good job. So he was a starting center for the majority of that that run where they went 22-4 from beginning of December through the end of January, there was a small blip on the radar later in the season when Olowokandi got healthy. They, after coming off the bench for a while, they put him back in the lineup from February 25th to March 19th. The team went just 5-6 with him in the starting lineup. They pushed him back to the bench, put Johnson back in the starting lineup. They finished the year strong. In fact, winning the last 9 games of the regular season. And Olowokandi actually played pretty well off the bench down the stretch of the regular season in March and into early to mid-April, and really kind of leaned into a bench role and was almost a sixth man of sorts off the bench in the post, which is a little unusual. But primarily, the Wolves relied on Irvin Johnson to be kind of a defensive stalwart next to Garnett, help support him on the glass. And he did that and did a good job. And you can draw a line pretty directly from him moving into the starting lineup to the Wolves succeeding, breaking out of that 9-8 start to the season, and really having going on that long run around the holidays. The other major change that the Timberwolves made to their lineup, they started the season with Fred Hoiberg in the starting lineup, and about midway through November, with the Wolves kind of off to that essentially a 500 start at that point, so just shortly before their real winning streak started and they won those 9 of 10 at the start of December, the Wolves moved Trent Hassel into the starting lineup. Hassel was also not quite as much of a journeyman, but had been kind of a bit player with the Chicago Bulls the previous couple of years, had been brought in and saw his role increase a little bit over the course of this season in year 2 with the Wolves. Was one of the few players who had been with the team for a year and was a good defensive player, but everybody knew he had plenty of weaknesses on offense. He didn't have three-point range and actually struggled to shoot the ball from mid-range as well. But he began starting in mid-November. Previous to that point in the season when they got off to a tough start, he was averaging around 22 minutes a game. From mid-November through the rest of this hot streak that the Wolves had through the end of January, he averaged 31 minutes a game, and it was a really big part of what the Timberwolves were doing. It allowed the bench unit to have Fred Hoiberg kind of come off the bench as the sharpshooter. The Wolves were able to operate without much spacing in the starting lineup. I mean, Sam Cassell and Latrell Sprewell were good enough three-point shooters. And I remember Cassell had a career best year from deep, shot almost 40% from beyond the arc. That was enough floor spacing. Hassel just kind of stood on the wing while Garnett would operate and be open for an open mid-range jumper that he would make enough of the time to allow teams to not completely load up on Garnett. But Hassel was good enough at moving the ball around the perimeter and being, again, being good enough of a mid-range shooter. And in those days, spacing the floor wasn't entirely as necessary. He wasn't spacing all the way out behind the arc in the corners. He was just kind of hanging out on the baseline. And he could swing the ball to a Cassell or a Sprewell for a three-pointer in the slot. And that typically worked for the Wolves offense. And he was so good defensively that those Wolves teams, that 03-04 Wolves team specifically, was legitimately great on defense. They were 6th in defensive rating over the course of the season. They were just 7th in opponent points per game. They allowed just 89 points a game that season. And a big part of that was Hassel's perimeter defense. Sprewell was an okay defender, but the Wolves didn't have much defense at the point guard spot. Cassell was just okay. The backup point guard spot was in flux throughout the season. Hoiberg wasn't a great defender, and Zerbiak, when healthy, wasn't entirely healthy and also was just an okay defender to begin with. So it was really important that the Wolves had that defensive edge on the perimeter from their wing guys and from somebody like a Hassel. And even though he didn't deliver much offensively, there was enough with Cassell, Sprewell, and Garnett that Minnesota was able to get away with essentially two non-factors on offense in Johnson and Hassel in the starting lineup. And the lineup was much better with those guys on the court than it was with Olowokandi and Hoiberg alongside the big three of Garnett, Cassell, and Sprewell. So interesting lineup tweaks by Flip Saunders that definitely worked and put the Wolves in a position to really grab a top seed in the West down the stretch. We'll talk about the stretch of the regular season and then also the interesting point guard situation that the Wolves had behind Sam Cassell and how ultimately that ended up coming back to haunt them a little bit in the playoffs as well. Coming down the stretch of the 2003-2004 regular season, the Timberwolves had a 49-24 record. They won their last 9 games of the season and were able to push past the San Antonio Spurs and get the top seed in the West, winning the Midwest division by just a game over San Antonio. Of course, the Spurs and Tim Duncan had been the Wolves' nemesis. They'd lost, I guess at that point, they'd lost 7 first-round series in a row, but 2 of the 7 were to the Spurs and to Tim Duncan, who had always given Garnett and the Wolves trouble. The Lakers won the Pacific Division, so by default got the second seed. had won 56 games. And then the Kings were the four seed, winning 55 games. The Wolves had the second best record in the entire NBA that year. The Indiana Pacers won 61 games in the Western Conference. And but the Timberwolves were easily the class of the West and used that winning streak at the end of the season to solidify that top spot. They hadn't played the Spurs since the latter part of March and did actually beat them in their last matchup. But then winning those nine in a row, it was primarily non-playoff teams. The schedule worked out really well for the Wolves, although they did beat the Sacramento Kings in the middle of that nine-game winning streak at the end of the season. But all that to say, the Wolves finished hot, did what they needed to do at the end of the year, and put themselves in a good place. The last thing, I want to talk about the playoffs in our next episode and really dig into those three series. But today I wanted to talk a little bit more about the backup point guard situation that the Wolves found themselves in that season. The Timberwolves didn't really set themselves up for success when it came to backup point guard. It's interesting. Previous years, the Wolves had guys in that role before acquiring Sam Cassell in the starting point guard role, and that had been really an issue. I mean, Terrell Brandon was solid, but after it was clear that he was done in Minnesota, the Wolves didn't have a plan. They had let Chauncey Billups leave in free agency, and he was starting to break out elsewhere. And basically, the Wolves started the year with journeyman Keith McLeod behind Sam Cassell, and he was only going to play about 10 minutes a game anyways. Cassell was averaging in the high 30s minutes per game to start the year. The Wolves went along with McLeod as their backup point guard until, and really, he was a late signing. It was basically the end of training camp. He was in training camp with the team that cut him, decided to re-sign him, and then gave him the job. He was with the team through the start of January, and then kind of in the middle of that hot streak, the Wolves decided to waive Keith McLeod and bring in Anthony Goldwire, another journeyman. Anthony Goldwire was with the team for two 10-day contracts, and was actually fairly successful. If my memory serves correctly, I remember thinking he did a pretty good job as the backup point guard, and the overall statistics would suggest that he was solid. Again, we're not talking major minutes because of just how much Cassell was playing, and of course, Cassell's workload definitely played into some of the issues in the playoffs, which we'll get into next episode. But Goldwire did average 13 minutes a game over five games, averaged 2.5 points and a couple assists per game, shot 33% from deep, and overall was a generally solid player. Those numbers are right in line with what McLeod had done over the first 33 games of the season that he appeared in. The difference, though, is that McLeod was not a three-point shooter at all. Goldwire was averaging just a little over a three-point attempt per game and shooting league average. So he added a little bit of that element off the bench that was beneficial. Instead, the Wolves chose to not sign him for the rest of the year, brought in Derek Martin, another journeyman, a 32-year-old, just like Goldwire was. And Martin only averaged 11 minutes a game, just a little over 3 points a game, shot 23% from beyond the arc. The idea is that his experience, he'd been playing recently in Europe, and that would help down the stretch of the season, and that he could play a big scoring role in the playoffs off the bench and provide some support. Unfortunately, it didn't end up working out that way, and the Wolves essentially had a revolving door at backup point guard that forced them into a position in the playoffs when Cassell eventually did get injured and actually missed a couple of games and simply wasn't himself when he played. The Wolves had to, as I mentioned at the top of the show today, have Garnett run the point guard. They didn't have anybody else that could do it for more than 10 to 12 minutes a game. There was literally not another point guard on the roster besides Derek Martin. And Derek Martin was not the answer as a 32-year-old journeyman who couldn't quite shoot the three and was not a good defender either. That put the Timberwolves in a really tough spot, and it's impossible to say if they had a more traditional, a solid backup point guard, if they had found a guy like, for instance, a Chauncey Billups type player who is had a little bit more upside or had a little more scoring punch or at least was a good defender. Had they found a guy like that to play 25 minutes a game or something and share some of the workload with Cassell in the playoffs or at least down the stretch of the regular season, or perhaps take some of the load off Garnett in the playoffs, maybe this turns out differently. Maybe we're not talking about the Wolves losing in the conference finals. A lot of the focus gets put on Sam Cassell and the way he was injured, which we'll talk much more about in the next episode. But I think some blame needs to be also placed on the front office for as good of a job as they did shoring up the starting lineup and adding some depth to the overall rotation. The back end of the roster was a disaster for this team. A revolving door of point guards. They had Indy Eby as a rookie contributing nothing coming out of high school. They experimented with 26-year-old Quincy Lewis, former University of Minnesota star. He was cut during the season. They brought in, when Olakande was injured, they brought in Oliver Miller, who was a 300-plus pound guy, journeyman 33-year-old who had been overseas. And the Wolves continued to kind of experiment with these these borderline washed up journeyman type guys and put themselves in a position where they just didn't have depth in the playoffs. And while a short rotation is definitely part of what the playoffs typically look like, the fact that there was no point guard depth definitely came back to bite the Timberwolves when it came to that final series of the season against the LA Lakers, which again, we'll talk quite a bit about here moving forward. All right, that's all we have for you today. As mentioned in the third and final episode of the week, which we'll post on Friday morning, we will talk about the playoffs from 2003-2004, reminisce a bit about how much fun the first two series were and what the downfall was in the third series. But ultimately, again, putting a bow on what was easily the best season in Timberwolves history. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Rejecting the Screen. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.